An individual goes along, and the more he lives, the more experience he gets, the more he knows he better not communicate and associate. And the more he refuses to communicate and associate, the less he'll find out about his fellow man, and the less actual restraint there is upon his doing things. And the more restraint he gets, why, the less restrained he acts. It's a wonderful thing. This is a philosophic enigma. An animal has one of the most complex minds you ever cared to have anything to do with. You get into a cat's head, you don't find much brain, but boy, do you find lots of mind. You get into a rabbit's head, same breed of feline almost. Cats and rabbits seem to have no trouble associating with each other. But this rabbit, in great terror, sees a wolf behind every rock and takes a fixed picture of every rock. He has one of the most obsessed, mystery-infested minds that anybody ever had anything to do with. Quite interesting. You say, how do you know about the mind of a rabbit? Well, I could tell you I put them on an e-meter and tell you a bunch of lies. As a matter of fact, I've looked at rabbits' minds. Also senators' minds, also wolves' minds. I find out that it is almost a scale here, that the more mind there is, and the less that mind can be handled by the person who possesses it, the more craven the conduct of the individual, and the less good he does his fellows. Well, one could say then it must be the devil's universe. It isn't, and this may be news to you, the content of the mind that is bothering you. It is the fact that you have one. That's a large bullet to chew, as a matter of fact. We went in with Dianetics to clean up somebody's mind. We went in with Scientology to get them so they could handle one. It's a further step, and that's a mindectomy. You could characterize somebody as a mindless saint. And you could characterize somebody else of less optimum behavior as a fully minded devil. And everything that we have learned on this would seem to indicate that the mind itself, rather than prevent evil, creates it. It forms an insulating mass beyond which a thetan cannot experience. And in view of the fact that it does this, he therefore cares little what he does to his fellow being, because when he strikes pain into a man, he feels it not. If you were in very good shape and you hit somebody on the head, you'd feel it, not with your fist, but with his head. But if you can be totally introverted about the whole thing and not feel anything more than your head, you can safely hit him on the head, can't you? So a mind acts as a restraint of feeling, and it may have in it a great many things which deter one from proceeding against one's fellows on a conscience basis, but for sure it insulates someone from ever feeling what happens to his fellows. About the most that Homo sapiens does is occasionally get a headache because somebody else has a headache. Now, he thinks this is a counter-restimulation. It is not a counter-restimulation. He's already identifying himself with that person and feels his headache. It isn't any headache anyplace else but in that person. Getting the somatic from somebody else is simply the mechanism of solving a problem. As we solve a problem over and over and over, get more and more solutions to a problem, we'll find out we get closure with the problem. And as we get more and more problems of comparable magnitude, we see that space opening up between the individual and the problem. You could ask anybody, you're running problems of comparable magnitude on him, and you ask, where is that problem now? And oddly enough, he'll always usually spot a location. Now you run a few more problems of comparable magnitude, and you say, where's the problem now? And he'll spot a location further away. Pretty soon it disappears way out there somewhere. All right, we take the same problem we've just solved, and we say, give us a solution. How fascinating. Give us a solution. Give us another solution. Another solution. Another solution. Another solution. Another solution. Where's the problem now? There. Give us another solution. Where's the problem now? There. Give us another solution. Where is the problem now? Right where I am. Now we can say, give us a problem of comparable magnitude to that problem. Another problem of comparable magnitude, and out the problem moves again. How fantastic. This is weird. It's an interesting phenomenon which you should be acquainted with, because it's one of the major phenomena you use in auditing. You know that separation's taking place the more problems you have somebody dream up, and the more problems you solve, the more closure you get. One of the reasons for this is the solution is more or less one side of an existing problem preserved and the other side gone. So the thing snaps in on the body, missing its own terminal. The process of solution is the process of knocking out one side or the other of a problem. You generalize to that degree. When you knock out one side of a problem, of course, it has to snap in on something, and so it snaps in on the individual's body. But this tells us a great deal. This gives us a lot of philosophic bait. Just exactly what is going on here. You mean we solve problems, and we go snap into them. And we invent more problems, and they part from us. Well, the enormity of space of this universe obviously indicates that this is an enormous problem. Space seems to be created in this fashion.